Warning: The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
All right, Wayne Allen Root here. This is War, guest host for Dr. Michael Savage. And a great honor it is. I want to thank Michael, and I want to thank Cumulus Media. And I want to give you the phone number, because I want to thank all the listeners. We'll have lots of calls tonight. I'll be back on Monday as well. It's been a great week. The number is 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. You could also go to the website, michaelsavage.com, for all of his books and all the stories we'll talk about on tonight's show. And the big news, of course, January 2nd, Michael Savage moves to beachfront property. You know, like Malibu or Santa Barbara or La Jolla, best property in the world, the finest, most expensive real estate. Michael moves to afternoon drive time. You'll find Savage Nation 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. East Coast time, as well as noon to 3 p.m. West Coast time for the first time ever. A little about me. War, Wayne Allen Root. I am the capitalist evangelist, the anti-Obama, former vice presidential nominee of the Libertarian Party, a presidential candidate, but won the VP nomination. Now back to the Republican Party, a true blue Republican conservative, Reagan libertarian patriot, a blue-collar son of a butcher. And I became Barack Obama's college classmate at Columbia University, class of 83. So see, I'm not joking. I really am the anti-Obama. I think we had 708 students in our class. It was 707 communists, Marxists, socialists, and extreme liberal progressives who hated America, hated capitalism, hated Judeo-Christian values, and one conservative Republican, Wayne Allen Root. And I'm the best-selling author of The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide, a great New Year's gift, by the way, for the conservative in your life. Ring in the new year the right way with The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide and my 18-point plan to mitigate the disasters of Obamacare and Obama's tax policies. Our guests today, we've got some great guests. First of all, we have Dr. Ron Paul, former United States Congressman, probably the greatest living libertarian in the world, other than Wayne Allen Root. Dr. Ron Paul, great man. One-time libertarian presidential candidate, 1988. Two-time Republican candidate for president of the United States with one heck of a following and a son that's a fine United States Senator, Rand Paul of Kentucky. Phil Gordon will be on the show, one of my heroes of capitalism. Last night I introduced you to Kip Herridge and to Lee Lipton. Guys just starting new multi-million-dollar businesses in this horrible economy. And here's another one, Phil Gordon, one of the greatest poker players in the world. But a lot of people, that's where you know him from. If you've ever watched any of those famous poker shows on TV, you know Phil Gordon. If you ever watched Poker Showdown on Bravo, he was the host for, I think, seven seasons. But more importantly, he's a guy most people don't realize, made millions of dollars at the age of 25 selling his first high-tech company, and now he's put big money into another high-tech company. Let's talk about a hero of capitalism. You can't keep a good man down. No matter what Obama does, you can't destroy guys like Phil Gordon, Lee Lipton, Kip Herridge, and yours truly, Wayne Allen Root. We are entrepreneurs and businessmen and capitalist evangelists, no matter who's president, no matter what's happening with the economy. We'll also have Tino Diaz on the show, CEO of America's Homeowners Alliance, because that's a pet project of mine. I own a home. I bought it knowing I had a mortgage deduction. There's been a mortgage deduction since the day we had income tax, I believe in 1913. Everyone who's ever bought a home in the United States of America bought it knowing that your mortgage is tax deductible. And Barack Obama wants to just rip it away. And it's not like he's saying, hey, you'll get 10 years to phase it out. These guys want to just end it tomorrow. Do you know how many people would be made homeless in this country? Do you know how many homeowners would lose their homes? You'd have a massive new bank crisis, massive new foreclosure crisis. Disaster. So Tino will be here, the CEO of the Homeowners Alliance, to discuss what we do to fight this. If you own a home, you have every right to get that mortgage deduction. Let me give you the phone number one more time so you can call in and talk to all our great guests. But how about Ron Paul? 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. I got an email today. I want to read it to you because I always find It's fascinating what people come up with, and this is fascinating. I wish I could take credit for it. I can't, but it's absolutely fascinating. World War II was about 4 years long. Started with the Japanese bombing of Pearl Harbor, ended with the surrender of Germany in 1945, so about 4 years long. And during those 4 years, the United States of America produced 22 aircraft carriers, 8 battleships, 48 cruisers, 349 destroyers, 420 destroyer escorts, 203 submarines, 34 million tons of merchant ships, you heard me, 34 million tons, 100,000 fighter aircraft, 98,000 bombers, 24,000 transport aircraft, 58,000 training aircraft, 93,000 tanks, 250,000 artillery pieces, 105,000 mortars, 3 million machine guns, and 2.5 million military trucks. We put 16.1 million men in uniform, shipped them all across the world, Africa, Sicily, Germany, England, and the whole Pacific, and then Japan. We planned and won the Battle for the Atlantic, planned and executed D-Day, marched across the Pacific and Europe, developed the atomic bomb, and conquered Japan and Germany in about the same 4 years. The Obama administration couldn't build a functioning website. Come on, folks. I mean, it's a joke. This is the United States of America. Barack Obama took $1 billion of your money. A billion, I said, not a million. And he couldn't build a freaking website. What a joke. That's the man running your country. And by the way, as I mentioned either last night or the night before, I must have mentioned to you that $500 million to build a website. And by the time they come through with the fix, it's going to be $1 billion on the website. Someone's got a Swiss bank account somewhere. That money didn't go to build a website that doesn't work. $1 billion to build it and fix it? I could build a website for $100,000. I could build you the greatest website you've ever seen in your life. Walmart, every day, millions of people shop on Walmart's website. Amazon, every day, millions of people are on Amazon's website. Folks, they didn't spend $500 million to build a website, and their websites work. So that money's in a Swiss bank account. And who got the deal? A no-bid contract yet. No bid. How's that even possible? How can a no-bid contract go to the friend and classmate at Princeton of the wife of the president? And you could say that with a straight face. These people have to go to prison, folks. This is jail-worthy. Obama's not too big to jail. I read that commentary, I believe, on the first night I guest-hosted Michael's show. Is Obama too big to jail? No, he's not. If he was a private sector CEO and he conned the American people and lied, committed fraud, and misrepresented and said, you won't lose your insurance if you like it, you can keep it. Millions of people will lose it. Now some are estimating, not Republicans, not conservatives, business experts with no axe to grind are estimating 100 million people will lose their insurance. That's prison. That's fraud. You go to jail for decades for that in the private sector. But if your wife asked her friend to build your website and gave a no-bid contract and it doesn't work and it was a half billion and now it's going to be $1 billion to fix it altogether between the building and the fixing, $1 billion? You don't think money went to a Swiss bank account for someone? Whew. Crimes, folks. This is criminal behavior. Okay. Let me start the show tonight before we get to Ron Paul. He's coming up fast. By talking about Braveheart's commentary I'll have coming out next week. Braveheart, my favorite movie of all time, Mel Gibson's movie Braveheart. My sons and I, we watch a great guy's movie every year during the holidays between Christmas and New Year's. And it's a family tradition around the Root household. And so we watched Braveheart the other night. And let me tell you, it's amazing. History always repeats. And those who fail to study history are destined to fail. The movie Braveheart is everything that's happening in America today. Go invest in Braveheart. Go buy it at Amazon or at Amazon.com. You know, purchase it for your TV set and watch it for the night. Watch it with your family. And now that I tell you about it, take a look at everything that happened in that movie. Yes, it was, you know, back in the year 1200. But assuming you could just put it aside, forget it was the year 1200 and it was Scotland, think of it as America in 2013 and now 2014, and tell me it's not the same thing happening today. Braveheart's the real-life story of Scotland's battle for freedom and self-determination against the all-powerful British Empire. It's exactly the same as what's happening today in Washington. The hero of Braveheart, Mel Gibson, played Sir William Wallace. This is a real-life story and a real-life hero. After I watched this movie the first time 10 years ago, I went out and bought the book on the life of Sir William Wallace. Amazing. One of the most passionate, enthusiastic, heroic, and principled leaders and warriors in world history. Willing to die for his country, and he did. And he didn't fight to get himself titles or mansions or estates or to become the leader of Scotland. He fought only to achieve freedom for his people and nothing for himself. He was the real deal. And Sir William Wallace, today, that's the Tea Party. It's Ron Paul, it's Rand Paul, it's Ted Cruz. Those are the heroes. They're Sir William Wallace, the Tea Party. That's why Obama had to destroy the Tea Party the same way King Edward had to destroy Sir William Wallace. And the evil, brutal protagonist in Braveheart, the bad guy, is the King of England, Edward Longshanks. Obama is Edward Longshanks today. He's out to control the people. He's out to claim every ounce of your wages and assets for himself. He wants control of every business in America. And, oh, he's a smart communist. He's brilliant. I call Obama the stealth Marxist. Because he doesn't say, I'm a communist and I'm taking over America. He just passes Obamacare. So he has full control over the entire medical system, 15% of America. And he wants to pass cap and trade, and he can't, so he just orders by executive fiat, executive order, executive authority, he just orders the EPA to shut down the coal industry and take control of American business and shoot your electric rates through the sky. He wants control of every decision you make and every ounce of your wages and assets. To Obama, your money is his money. He is King Edward Longshanks of England. Every decision he thinks should be made by government, every conversation listened to by government, every dollar of yours belongs to him. Like the old King of England, Obama's vicious and arrogant. He lied to his people to get his way, and he constantly breaks his word to set up his enemies for defeat. That's Obama. We're going to break in a matter of seconds, but I want to finish this thought. Does this remind you of, if you like your insurance, you can keep it? Does it sound like I didn't know about the IRS persecution of conservative Tea Party groups? I didn't know about Benghazi. I didn't know about NSA snooping on world leaders. I didn't know about NSA snooping on the American people. I have the most transparent administration in history. I'm a friend of the energy industry. I support oil drilling. I'm a friend of small business. My policies are about saving the middle class. My God, he is King Edward. He lies about everything to get his way and to take control of your life. Like the King of England, Obama's a liar. He'll tell people anything to distract them while he takes control of your lives and livelihood. We're going to break. I will finish this Braveheart analogy when I get back, because I want to tell you who the noblemen are. The noblemen of Scotland who sold out their own people. They're all alive today, too, and I want to tell you who they are. I'm Wayne Allyn Root. This is War. Fill it in. Guest host for the great Dr. Michael Savage on Savage Nation. Be back with more Braveheart and Ron Paul.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, everyone. Wayne Allyn Root. This is War, guest hosting for Dr. Michael Savage. For all you football fans out there, by the way, got a bowl game going on. Syracuse just scored late in the game to take the lead, 21-17 over Minnesota. Some of you may know my background is sports as a Vegas odds maker, and I happen to like bowl season very much and enjoy these games and host the show with all the football games playing in the background. So Syracuse up by 4 late in the game, 1 minute to go in their bowl game. So we were talking about Braveheart, the movie that I just watched for the first time in probably 10 years. I've watched it many times, but I don't think I've watched it in about a decade. Mel Gibson's movie Braveheart, and how everything about it reminds me of Barack Obama and America today. So Obama's the King of England, I explained that, and like the King of England, he's a liar. He'll say anything to distract you and take control of your life. He'll use the powers and forces of government to get his way, to silence dissent, to steal your property, to control your lives. He sicks the government on his own people. just like the King of England. What is he sick? The IRS, the NSA, the EPA, the SEC, you name the government agency, they are at war with the American people. How about the Labor Bureau? How about the Census Bureau, Labor Department, and Census Bureau? Folks, they committed fraud to help Obama win the 2012 election. Did any of you even know this? It hasn't made big headlines, but it's certainly out there that whistleblowers have come forward and said they completely made up the unemployment numbers. I remember the month before the election, in October of 12, they said 500,000 new jobs are created. I said, what? 500,000 jobs created? Not in the world I live in. There are no jobs created. And suddenly Obama says, see, the economy's doing great. And Mitt Romney, the stiff that he is, and I loved him and I supported him, but man, that guy has A, no personality, and B, he's not a fighter. And he just accepted it. He didn't say one word, and I kept screaming at the TV screen during the debates. Don't let him get away with that. It's a lie. It's manipulated. There aren't 500,000 new jobs. Now it turns out I was exactly right. They made the number up out of thin air. So that's what Obama does. He's at war with the people. He's a liar. His goal, like Edward Longshanks, the King of England, the most brutal king ever, is to create a two-class society, the super rich, which in those days were called royalty, and the masses of serfs. Every tyrant needs a two-class society because the super rich and the royalty, they're beholden to government, and the poor are beholden to government. The rich need government because they need bailouts and stimulus and government contracts and corporate welfare and special interest carve-outs because they've got armies of lawyers, accountants, and lobbyists, and small business cannot compete with that. So the super rich sell out the middle class in a nanosecond for a $1 billion deal. Ask Warren Buffett, the ultimate sellout. Ask Jeffrey Immelt, the CEO of GE. He should be ashamed of himself. They love Obama, and they sold out small business. And all the tyrants love the masses of poor folks, so the middle class has to go. And then there are the noblemen of Scotland, folks, and that's the GOP establishment in D.C. They sell us out every day to get their estates and their titles. Braveheart is America today. This is war. Wayne Allyn will be right back with Ron Paul.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back. This is War. Wayne Allyn Root, guest host this week for Dr. Michael Savage. The great one. Thank you, Michael. It's been a wonderful week. I'll be back on Monday as well to wish you all a happy new year. The call-in number, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Get on the line. We want to hear from you. The website, michaelsavage.com. Michael changes over to primetime real estate, afternoon drive time, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. starting on January 2nd on Cumulus stations all over the United States of America. I'm Wayne Allyn Root, the capitalist evangelist, the anti-Obama, former Libertarian vice presidential nominee, now back to the Republican Party. I'm the author of the national bestseller, Top 10 Political Book of the Year, 2013, The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide. The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide, How to Survive, Thrive, and Prosper During Obamageddon. And one of my political heroes is Dr. Ron Paul. And we've got him on the line. United States Congressman for so many years, three-time presidential candidate, once for the Libertarian Party, twice for the GOP, a great man. I wish he was the Secretary of the Treasury right now, if not the President of the United States. We'd be in a heck of a lot better shape. Dr. Paul, are you there?
I am here. Nice to be with you tonight.
Hey, Ron, I really appreciate it during the holidays you being with us. By the way, a sports update for everyone. I don't know if Ron's a big fan, but I know you live in Texas. And the Texas Bowl is now final. Syracuse with the upset, 21-17. Syracuse upsets Minnesota in the Texas Bowl, just went final. For all you male Republican sports fans out there, the rabid football meat eaters of the world like myself, a little football update. All right. So, Ron Paul, tell us, everyone knows your political career. It's storied. It's incredible. We love you. Where are you now? What are you up to nowadays?
Spending a lot more time in Texas and still doing the things that I did before, but more or less on my time. I still like to visit the universities, and occasionally I'll go out and give a speech at a hard money conference or a homeschooling conference or on a college campus. So I stay pretty busy, but it's more relaxing because I don't have this need to be on an airplane every time John Boehner says we have to go up and vote on something that doesn't have any effect on our future.
Hey, you know, our paths almost crossed. I was one of the four keynote speakers along with you and Dr. Benjamin Carson and Charles Krautheimer at the New Orleans Investment Conference just about 6 weeks ago. But I came in on a different day than you. I was speaking on a different day, and we just missed each other. I was sorry to... Oh, no, I did see you backstage. That's right, I did catch you.
We got to say hello.
I did catch you, that's right. I caught you at the last minute. My speech was over and you were backstage. So I'm glad we had a chance to catch each other there. That's right. Glad you reminded me. So listen, we all know the country is off track. And we all know if you were president, things would be very different. So tell everybody out there what you would do different, and I know that's a mouthful, but just, you know, a few quick things. If you had a nanosecond to turn around the U.S. economy, what would a Ron Paul do as president that would be completely polar opposite and make a difference versus what a Barack Obama is doing as president?
Well, you know, there is a limit, because if you're realistic, you have to think, well, one person, if he's up against a Congress and a Supreme Court, you know, you can't wave a wand and do it. I can talk about the policies that I know that would be good.
Well, hey, by the way, Ron, in a way you can wave a wand. Obama has just decided the Constitution doesn't matter, and you just call it, you know, executive order.
Well, that's our problem. We'd want to live within the laws. But one option that we would have as a libertarian constitutionalist would be that all the executive orders that have been imposed illegally, another president should be able to remove those executive orders. I don't believe in the legislating through executive orders, but I do believe there's been too many, and if they occurred by President Donald, I think you could cancel those out. But presidents have more to say about foreign policy than they do about how many dollars are being spent. Yes, the president can veto, and I certainly would have vetoed an awful lot. We wouldn't be in this fight over Medicare, that's for sure. I would be promoting and pushing the opt-out principle that when people don't like what the government's doing, you always have a chance to get out of, whether it's the medical system or the schooling system or whatever that you're involved in. You ought to have the right to get out, even though perfect freedom is what we should seek and following the Constitution is what we should seek. But we could make the world safer by a different foreign policy. You know, we don't need to go around, you know, looking for fights. And right now, I'm rather pleased that conservatives and libertarians and the progressives have gotten together to restrain the president a little bit on his desire, you know, to go to war and start bombing in Syria. So there have been slight improvements. But, no, what you need to do is you need to change the culture. You need to change the people. You need to change the attitude that the majority of the people are going to demand, insist that they be taken care of from cradle to grave. But that will come when the bankruptcy is very evident. Today, people are still trusting our dollar, and, they loan us the money, so the welfare state continues.
You know, it's crazy that you said when the bankruptcy is evident. I mean, I don't know. I guess 98% of the people, I agree with you, don't know it's evident. But to me, it's evident right now, isn't it? I mean, don't you think the bankruptcy is pretty evident?
Oh, yeah. I mean, technically, we are bankrupt. We're insolvent. We couldn't pay the bills. But we don't suffer the consequences like Detroit. All of a sudden, the bankruptcy is declared. We knew Detroit was bankrupt for a long time. But they were able to keep spending money and borrowing money, and people were foolish enough to loan money, you know, and they'd borrow from the pension funds. So it limped along. It technically was bankrupt. But then when the money quit coming in, then the collapse came, and they turned it into a third world nation city. But this is that can happen to our whole country, you know, if nobody will buy our debt. And, right now they're buying less of it, and interest rates are starting to go up, and deficits are going to be worse. So I think the climactic end is yet to come. Right now, there's still a lot of confidence placed in the dollar, a lot more than it deserves, a lot of confidence placed in America and its great military power. But it cannot continue. That is what I'm convinced of. I think we're getting rather close to the end of it.
You know, I had Jim Rogers on the other night as one of my guests. Jim, I assume, is a friend of yours, yes?
Right.
And Jim and I, you know, both are in agreement on quite a few things. I'm sure you're in agreement on all of them. But one of them is gold. What I can't understand is why gold is not zooming upward as opposed to falling badly downward. Do you have any idea, you know, in your mind, what's going on with gold? Is this manipulation by the government, perhaps, or by some of the big Wall Street firms in cahoots with the government?
Yeah, I think it could be that. But, you know, in Austrian economics, there's a very important element called the subjective theory of value. So that you can't predict. You can't say, well, I see the money supply going up and gold should be this. There are a lot of variables. So the market forces and the traders have something to say about this. But governments can get very involved also because they have, if they had gold soaring to $5,000, this would say that there is no confidence that, you know, the end would come. So they have a lot at stake to do, you know, to manipulate. But also, I think, is looking at another way, in the last 11 years, 10 years out of 11, we were in a bull market. Gold was up every single year. We've had one year that's been down. And when you look at the devaluations, I look at it, you know, since we just had this 100th anniversary for the Fed, 98% of the dollar value was removed by the Fed over those 100 years. Gold went from $20 up to right now $1,200. That's a 6,000% increase. It's even much greater than what the CPI went over that period of time. But I agree with you that, you know, when the dust settles, gold is going to be much, much higher. And because we can see the future, we think it should happen right now. But markets don't work that way, especially when there are these government's variables thrown in there. And they have the President's Working Group on Financial Markets, the Plunge Protection Team. Their job is to try to smooth over markets and keep the stock market up. And, you know, Jim Grant and others were saying they specifically believe that, you know, the mandate to the Fed, no matter what it says, the number one mandate for the Fed now is to prop up the stock market.
Well, the number one mandate since the day it was founded in 1913 is to prop up the dollar, and the dollar is 98% down. So they're not too good at it, are they?
No, they have this mandate on stable prices, and look at the stable prices in the 30s and in the 70s and now. And then they want to say full employment, and look at where the employment has been over all these years. And they wanted reasonable, steady interest rates. And look, in our lifetime, they were up in the 70s up to 21%. Now they're at 0%. And the most important information that you can get to sort out things in the economy. And everybody talks about, well, you know, they printed a lot of money, but there's not a whole lot of inflation. Well, there are a lot of other problems with inflating the money supply. The inflation is here. The money supply has been increased. The interest rates have been altered. So all of the things that we have been doing for these last 5 years have had, it's been misled. So I think we have distortions and bubbles all over the place.
And manipulation. Because, I mean, you know, a guy that I follow is John Williams at Shadow Stats. You familiar with that website?
Mm-hmm.
And Shadow Stats is fantastic at telling you what the real inflation is. You add back the cost of gas at the pump and home heating oil and groceries at your store. He says inflation is like 10, 11%. So the idea that there's no inflation is just a figment of the government's manipulation.
Yeah, and you know, inflation, of course, I say it's the money supply, but the prices will be affected, but you can't predict that. You know, even in the 20s, they kept reassuring themselves, we're not having a problem with inflation because we had increased productivity, but we had inflation in the stock market. I think the biggest bubble we have now is in the bond market, even bigger than the stock market. So it's those distortions that come. We're back in the same business of having an artificial housing market. You have to have savings, and you have to have honest, real market interest rates for a healthy economy. And we haven't had that for a long time, and it's also the reason we haven't come out of this recession either.
You know, the best economy in the world, and I've studied all of them, the most booming economy has been for the last, I don't know, four decades, Hong Kong. And they've got a 15% flat tax. They allow deductions for your home and charity. And they have a 0% capital gains tax. And the result is unemployment of about 3%. So I guess, you know, I talked about this with Jim Rogers on Monday, and I'm wondering if you also agree that, you know, my recipe for turning America around is a 15% or lower flat tax, and you retain your deductions for mortgage and charity. You don't have to get rid of them. And you bring capital gains taxes theoretically down to zero, but you know probably they'll never, liberals will never allow that in America, but certainly you bring it down as far as you can. Isn't that a recipe for success in economies around the world?
Absolutely. One of my daydreams, you asked me about what I do in a day or two to change America. That was a bigger job, but I have a daydream of saying, well, I wonder if I had the chance to take Cuba, you know, and turn it into a giant Hong Kong. Can you imagine what that place would be like, you know, with the climate? It's bigger than Hong Kong. That would be just really miraculous. The one thing about Hong Kong I found fascinating is it gives you a good chance to think about free trade, because what if they inhibited stuff coming in? No, they have nothing. They don't have natural resources, nothing. Yet they had, and somebody said it's still very, very wealthy, but they had more wealth in that city, state, you know, that little area than all of China, which proves your point about how valuable free markets are. And you'd think people either have to be mean and nasty and ornery if they know anything about economics to put on to their people, you know, say in so many nations that are poor, and in our own nation, which is getting poorer, when they know, they see all this evidence, I don't know what they say to themselves. Oh, yeah, but Hong Kong is different. Or, you know, they rationalize, no, America was different before. We can't ever go back to, you know, free markets and sound and the gold stand. No, that wouldn't work. So many times I consider it more ignorance than anything else, because they've been brainwashed by a educational system that tells them that, you know, the Bernankes and the Paul Krugmans of the world say, you know, under these conditions, you have to spend more money, you have to borrow more money, you have to print more money. No matter what you do, just spend more money.
Well, and don't forget that Paul Krugman gets a Nobel Prize for that. Obama gets a Nobel Peace Prize for creating no peace, and Krugman gets an economic Nobel Prize for asking us to spend more money and end the debt crisis with more debt. It's amazing. Hey, Ron, we're headed to a quick ad break. I want you to stay on the line. When you get back, I want to talk about Obamacare and A, what it's going to do to the economy, and B, what your prescription would be as a doctor for solving the health care woes of this country. I assume tort reform might have something to do with that. It's not in Obamacare. And I love your analogy of taking over Cuba and using it as a test case. I love it. You know, I wrote a commentary about Detroit and letting Mitt Romney take over Detroit and be their economic czar and watch in 3 years if you ran a country with a city with, or city-state, as you say, with great sound money policies and with Austrian economics and with low capital gains, and you made it a model for the nation. I'll bet you could turn around to Detroit just as easily as a Cuba and show the whole nation how it's done. We'll be right back with Dr. Ron Paul, former Congressman Ron Paul, former presidential candidate Ron Paul. He's got a lot of titles, and I love the guy. I'm Wayne Allyn Root. This is War, Savage Nation. Be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back to Savage Nation. Wayne Allyn Root. This is War, your guest host for this evening, for all of this week, for Monday as well. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy holidays. We're on with former Congressman and Republican presidential candidate Ron Paul, one of the great conservative thinkers and libertarian thinkers in this world today. Ron, tell me about Obamacare. You're a doctor by profession, a baby doctor, as a matter of fact, and nobody ever consulted with you and the doctors of the world how to help heal the healthcare system, did they?
No, and I don't think they consulted with very many patients who are now suffering the consequences of this mess and with their insurance being all filed up. So they're determined to have government-run medicine, and that is the problem. You know, I start with the fact that I don't even believe the federal government should be involved in medical care at all. Of course, we're in a mess already. Even before Obamacare, Republicans and Democrats have been pushing government involvement in medicine for a long time. But the tax code has been a mess. You know, the benefits by big corporations getting deductions, but individuals and small companies not. That should be changed. I mean, even under today's circumstances, some of these things would be helpful. The fact that they're not promoting and they're making it more difficult to have savings accounts. If you wanted to get out of the system, put money away, get the deducted, have a major medical policy, That would be helpful if they could sell insurance across state lines, which is what the Interstate Commerce Clause is supposed to do, not regulate interstate commerce, but to make sure interstate commerce is, you know, freely flows. So that would be something they can do. But this whole thing about insurance, they've destroyed the whole definition of insurance. First, they tell insurance companies that you have to insure everybody regardless of previous conditions. That would be sort of like buying food insurance and let everybody go out and buy all their food, or car insurance that says you have to take care of the repair work even if the car is 20 years old and you had to pay for the gasoline. The whole thing is just nuts about calling this insurance. At the same time, you know, they force the insurance companies to do one thing, and then the insurance companies come along and they cancel all the contracts. If you had a free market on insurance, the individual would be taking care of themselves. You'd buy it when you were young, and they would guarantee you, you know, future insurance. But now, all we hear now is the government permitting the insurance companies to cancel all the policies. It's the worst thing in the world, but you could immediately help things if you just legalize the right to get out and give people a little tax break on this, and you would make a lot of people real happy, and it would solve a lot of these problems that Obamacare is just going to make worse.
Isn't that funny? Great minds think alike. Is that, I mean, to me, it's just three things. Number one, it's tort reform. I'm sure you agree tort reform is
sure
right at the top of the list. Number two is allow people to buy insurance anywhere they want. Just give them more freedom, and that'll bring the price down. And number three, you just said the best one, I think, is if you just gave every individual the right to deduct from his taxes all his medical expenses, whether it's insurance or if someone gets sick and you have a $30,000 bill for cancer surgery, it comes off your taxes. Why would you have to pay taxes on it? Wouldn't those three alone just streamline and simplify the whole health insurance system, and boom, we'd be in good shape?
It would be.
Hey, Ron, you know what? I'm sorry. We're headed to break. You know, these things always end way too soon. We're running off to our next ad break. So listen, Dr. Ron Paul, we love you. Thank you for being with us. Always great answers. God bless and Happy New Year. Wayne Allyn-Root, this is War, Savage Nation. Be right back.
Savage. Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
And here he is, War. For Michael Savage. Hi, everyone. I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. Welcome to the second hour of Savage Nation. Guest hosting for Michael all week. Thank you, Michael. A great honor. Thank you, Cumulus Radio. The call-in number is 855-400-SAVAGE. Call in, 855-400-SAVAGE, which is 855-400-7282. The website, michaelsavage.com. And by the way, my website, rootforamerica.com, the book, The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide. That's right, I'm that guy, the Ultimate Obama Survival Guy, Wayne Allyn-Root, here for Savage Nation. All right, so my next guest is one of my heroes of capitalism. I've had them on each of my shows on Monday, on Thursday, and now on Friday, my hero of capitalism tonight, Phil Gordon. He's an entrepreneur. He's a best-selling author. He's a philanthropist. But he's most famous as a professional poker player. If you ever watched Bravo's Celebrity Poker Showdown, Phil was the host of the show. He was a World Poker Tour champion. He's won more than $3 million in tournament winnings around the world. He's written four great poker books and the bestseller of the group, Phil Gordon's Little Green Book. He's now CEO and founder of Jawfish Games, based in Seattle, and a company with almost $1 million of seed capital, mostly his money, 17 full-time employees based in liberal Seattle. Phil, how do you survive in liberal Seattle? That's my first question.
Nice to talk to you, Wayne. It's such a pleasure to be on the show. You've been a longtime friend, and thank you for having me. Seattle is a great city, and Washington is a lot more entrepreneurial friendly than you might expect. First, we're a tech company, so you know, being based in the home of Microsoft and Amazon, we get a lot of great recruits from those companies. But also, you know, Washington, no state income tax, and that's a big boon if you ever have a hit on your hands.
Yeah, well, you know that I'm a big fan of it. That's why I live in Nevada. Exactly. And by the way, you at one point lived out here in Nevada and then moved to Washington, I think just because you have two young boys, if I'm correct, right? You moved just for family situation.
Yeah, well, we were next door neighbors, and I decided once my kids were born that we wanted to raise them in a city with the clean air, clean water, good schools, and Washington State stood out by a mile. Of course, we tried to limit our search to areas with low taxes, so California was pretty much out. And Washington State won the bid, and now we're in Seattle.
I'm surprised you never considered Texas, like in Austin. For a high-tech guy like you, also no state income taxes, and there's kind of a capitalist flair in the air in Texas.
Yeah, you know, I think a big part of it for us was wildlife and four seasons. You know, we wanted the kids to have a place where they could you know, see the great outdoors. Also, my wife is from Vancouver, and you know, convincing her to move to Texas.
Got it.
Vancouver was too much of a hard sell. You know, Seattle, we're just a couple hours from Vancouver, so it's a lot easier.
Well, that makes sense. But here's my real question: are you crazy? Why would someone invest about $1 million in a new company and hire people and pay for their lives and make payrolls and pay for health insurance for people when we've got this horrible Obama economy? I call it the Obama Great Depression. Why would an entrepreneur do that? You're either crazy or you're crazy like a fox. Which one is it?
Yet to be determined. You know, here's the way I think about it. And when I helped you with your book, writing a chapter for your great book, I said the same thing. You know, if you're going to start a business, start with the wind at your back. And there are a lot of headwinds in today's economy. There are a lot of headwinds for entrepreneurs across the United States. But for the Internet and Internet-enabled businesses, particularly mobile businesses like ours, we have a huge tailwind. I just read today, for the first time in history, more than 56% of Americans own a smartphone. That's an all-time record, way up, just in the last couple of years, and it's getting stronger around the world. So, you know, basically, we're just skating to where the economy,
where the puck is,
and the economy's all going mobile.
Where the puck is, right? Isn't that what Wayne Gretzky says? Skate where the puck is going to be, not where it is right now, where it's going to be, and you're skating to where it's going to be. Tell us about your fish. You know, I'm fascinated, I'm sure our listeners are too, about, you know, when a guy starts a business in this economy and puts up $1 million of his own money, puts his money where his mouth is. What is Jawfish all about?
Yeah, so basically we believe that the future of mobile gaming in particular is in real time. We think that a lot of the turn-by-turn experiences that people play on their phones, you know, if you play Words with Friends or any of those very slow-paced games, we think you can do a lot better if you're playing in real time. And so I partnered with some of the best real-time engineers in the business that have built these scalable systems before, and we set out 2 years ago to basically build the world's best infrastructure for real-time multiplayer gaming on mobile. And we've done just that. We've got a great poker game on the market. I'd encourage you to check it out, Jawfish Poker, if you have an iOS device, an iPhone, or an iPad. It's a lot of fun, really fast-paced, great action. You're playing against real people. And the best part of it, no waiting for other players to take their turn. It's all in real time.
But the only way you could possibly do this, because poker is basically only legal on a state-by-state basis in a couple of states, Nevada, Delaware, New Jersey, is yours is just a game play for fun, right? Is that the deal?
Yeah, it's all free to play. You know, there are no charge for the chips. Obviously, you know, online poker in the United States is now illegal except in New Jersey, Nevada, and Delaware. We hope that that will change in the next year, and it certainly looks like there's momentum behind that effort. You know, there's always been talk about national legislation. California would be a big state. New York would be a nice state to have come online. But for now, it's free to play. It's a lot of fun, no charge for the chips. And, you know, it's always just a lot of fun.
Tell everyone out there who has, you know, my background is long before I got into politics, wrote a best-selling political book and ran for president of the United States, I was a Vegas oddsmaker. And your background, even though you're really an entrepreneur and a high-tech guy, a brilliant high-tech guy with a Georgia Tech degree, your background is being one of the world's great poker players. So for those out there who are, say, conservatives and have never gambled in their lives or big Christians who have never gambled in their lives, tell them, you know, why what poker's all about. I think it's a skill game. It's not gambling. Explain to everybody what your joy of poker is. How about that?
So Wayne, I played pro for 10 years on the tour, and I've never gambled a day in my life. Playing poker at the top level is not gambling. Poker at the top level is strategic investing. And what I mean by that is when I put $100 in the pot, I'm expecting, on average, to get more than $100 back out. There's not much difference in that in, like, investing in the stock market or, you know, picking winners like you used to do at the sports book at a positive expectation. You know, all you really want to do is get your money in with the best of it and see what happens. And you want to do that as many times as possible. That's how they build billion-dollar hotels in Las Vegas and the other gambling capitals around the world, is those small strategic advantages applied over millions of trials. And that's exactly what we try to do as poker players. So, you know, I've never considered myself a gambler. I've always just considered myself a guy who's able to look at the odds, to mathematically analyze the situation and get my money in with the best of it over and over and over.
Isn't that funny? Because that's exactly how I look at sports gambling. I mean, I've never considered myself a gambler, and I think I gamble far more as an entrepreneur than I ever do making sports bets, because I might bet $1,000 on a football game, but I've bet millions of dollars on my businesses. And I at one point spent well over $2 million a couple of times on my houses. And some of them have gone up and doubled in price, and some of them have crashed, as the Vegas market did a couple of years ago. And I lost half of $4 million on a house. That's gambling, folks. So, you know, buying a house, gambling, buying stocks, gambling, buying gold is gambling. Everything, every investment on earth is a gamble. But if handled correctly over a lifetime, I think most smart people do well investing. And I think Phil proves you could do well playing poker. I prove you could do well playing sports. I grind it out. So very similar philosophies, Phil and I, in the gambling world, and we don't think it's gambling. We think you could play conservative and play it safe and make a great living at it. And you mentioned I used to do it. I still do it, Phil, still do it. It's just a much smaller part of my life. Politics is probably 90% of my life now.
Who do you like, Seattle game?
Well, there's a game going on right now. Is that the one? BYU and Washington are playing right now
in
a bowl game. Oh, Seattle playing on St. Louis on the NFL on Sunday. It's early. I don't make my picks for Sunday until Saturday.
Right.
Once again, talking about conservative.
Stay on air, but call me later and let me know.
I will. But, you know, again, speaking of conservative, I wait till the last possible minute. I take in every single factor. I accept phone calls from all over the country from people who are smarter than me, people who are betting millions of dollars a game, and I find out what they think. I listen to all their opinions, and then I make my final opinion. That's why on a Sunday NFL game, I make it at 4 o'clock Saturday afternoon. It's all about taking in lots and lots of smart opinions and figuring out the right way to go. So we've got about a minute, and that won't be the end of the interview because we'll go to a break, and then I want to come back and talk to you some more. But in the minute, I just want to ask you what principles you've learned in poker that you apply to the employees you hire. Are there some things you look at in an employee to see if that applies to poker, to see if they'll be good employees?
Yeah, well, if they're going to be great poker players, they're going to be great employees. I'm looking for people that are aggressive, that are patient, that are courageous, observant, resilient, and have a constant desire to improve. I think when I look at the poker players that are most successful on tour, they have all six of those qualities, and when I'm looking at hiring an employee, I'm evaluating them for those six qualities much more so than whatever position they're applying for. I think that if they've got at least five of those six, they're going to be awesome employees. If they have six of the six, they get hired immediately, regardless of what position we're trying to hire for. If they got four out of the six, it's probably not going to hire them.
All right, we're talking to Phil Gordon, one of the great poker players in America, but also one of the great entrepreneurs, a hero of capitalism. We'll be right back with more from Phil Gordon and his Jawfish Company. And I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. This is War. Savage Nation, we'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Weather.
Hey, you're on with the Capitalist Evangelist, War, Wayne Allyn-Root. Thanks for listening tonight. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy holidays. Wayne Allyn-Root, guest host for Dr. Michael Savage, the great one. I want to thank Michael and Cumulus Radio for giving me this great opportunity. Call-in number, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. The website, michaelsavage.com. Starting on January 2nd, Michael becomes the proud owner of beachfront property. I once owned a home in Malibu. That's valuable beachfront property. And Michael has got valuable beachfront property because Savage Nation moves to afternoon drive time. That's prime property in the real estate radio world. 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock Eastern Time, starting on January 2nd for Savage Nation. Congratulations, Michael. As far as my background, capitalist, evangelist, anti-Obama, former vice presidential nominee for the Libertarian Party, now back to the Republican Party, Obama's college classmate at Columbia, and the best-selling author of The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide. I am rightfully proud of the fact that as of today, the year is basically up. The last book report came out from BookScan, and my book made the top 10 of all political books in America for the year 2013. They can never take it away from me. Nobody can jump over me and push me back. I made it to number 10. That's pretty cool. A timer who had incredible platforms. But nobody fights harder than me. Nobody in the world. But kind of close to me would be a Phil Gordon. He is an entrepreneur's entrepreneur. He is a fighter. He is a tough guy. And when government's against you and investors are against you and the whole world is, the economy is against you and the whole world is conspiring against you, an entrepreneur has to get back up and fight again and again and again, just like a poker player after a bad hand. And Phil's my man. I want to be in the foxhole with the Phil Gordons of the world. Hey, Phil, welcome back to Savage Nation.
Thanks.
So tell us about the pain and the joys of entrepreneurship. You know, what kind of things have happened that really tickle you pink and make you glad you're an entrepreneur? And what are some stories of the real pain of raising millions of dollars or putting in millions of dollars and making payrolls and paying health insurance and trying to hold on when we all know business is up and down and up and down and it's a battle? Pain and joy of entrepreneurship.
Yeah, well, you know, the last 2 years have definitely been an education for me. We started, you know, with quite a few advantages. First of all, I've got an unbelievably talented tech team and team around me, and that was huge. And then we had some money behind us right away. You know, one of the interesting things that happens as an entrepreneur is, you know, hiring, firing, laying off, all that other sort of stuff that happens, and it's tough. You know, you make a bad hire early days of a company, and it can really have a significant impact on your chances of success. And, you know, entrepreneurs with limited capital like we have, you don't get too many chances to make mistakes. I think that's really the key lesson that I've learned these last couple of years. You know, every day you got to fight. You got to make really high-quality decisions, the best decisions that you can make day over day with limited information that you have. And, you know, if you mess up, going bankrupt or going out of business is commonplace, particularly in the tech world. You know, one of the stats that strikes me about tech entrepreneurship is that 7 out of 10 brand-new tech companies go broke within the first couple of years. And, you know, it's incredibly high. About 2 out of 10 will return their initial capital to their investors, and only 1 out of 10 provide, you know, a positive return for the capital that's invested.
Which isn't even necessarily a home run. It's just a return of capital and maybe a little bit of profit, right?
That's not Twitter or Facebook. That's
right.
A profit. Now, Twitter and Facebook are the unicorns and the $100 billion exits there, but those are few, very, very few and far between. The most common outcome by far, as you well know, in small business is bankruptcy.
Is failure, yeah.
And anyone that's getting into entrepreneurship and starting a new business, you know, you really have to have an extreme amount of resiliency. You have to really be able to take the beats, the bad beats, as we say in the poker world, and bounce back and make the best of whatever you're dealt. And sometimes we've been dealt a good hand at Jawfish Games, and sometimes we've been dealt a bad hand. But try to make the best of it and move on. And just keep making quality decisions day after day.
Where can people find more information about Jawfish Games?
Yeah, well, yeah, our best game that's on the market right now is Jawfish Poker. If you have an iOS device, an iPad, or an iPhone, please download it and try it out. We'd love to have you play. I'll be playing later tonight. It's Jawfish Poker, J-A-W-F-I-S-H, and it's easy to find on the App Store. If you have an Android device, I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to help you out right now, but maybe later this year we will be able to. And, yeah, come and play some poker. It's a lot of fun.
All right. All right. Well, Phil, we're headed to break. Smart guy and poker player extraordinaire and all-around great guy and entrepreneur, Phil Gordon. We love you. We thank you for having me on. Jawfish Games, Jawfish Poker. He is the man. I'm Wayne Allyn Root. This is War.
Hot Talk 560 KSFO.
It's more Wayne Allen Root, guest host for Dr. Michael Savage. Great, great hour coming up. Actually, an hour and a half left to the show. Great hour and a half coming up. We've got a guest coming up in a second to talk about the mortgage interest deduction and the fact that Obama and quite a few politicians on both sides of the aisle are coming after it, trying to take it away from you. Let's talk about that. But first, I want to reintroduce. This is the Savage Nation. I'm the guest host this week for Dr. Michael Savage. My name is Wayne Allen Root. And the call-in number, 855-400-SAVAGE. That's 855, toll-free, 400-7282. Get on the line. We're going to have some fun, and I'd love to talk to you. And we'll talk some economics, and we'll talk some Republican politics. As a matter of fact, while I'm hosting a show for Michael Savage, I've also been a guest on many shows. I think I did 5 interviews today, 4 yesterday, 3 the day before, and all of them seem to be grabbing a hold of my concept that the Republican Party has huge problems because of our leaders in Washington, who are traitors. Moderate Republican, mamby-pamby Northeast, moderate Republican compromisers who think all of life is about genuflecting when Obama walks in the room and shaking their boots when Obama, the king, walks in the room. Well, you know what? We're not going to win any elections, and we're not going to take back America with that kind of attitude. Call in and let's talk about it. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. You're talking with the anti-Obama himself. I'm the college classmate of Barack Obama, class of 83, Columbia University. All right. Our next guest is Tino Diaz. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. Tino Diaz, CEO of America's Homeowners Alliance. And this is a pet issue of mine. This is an issue that really gets my dander up because I'm a homeowner. And I bought my home knowing that the mortgage was tax deductible, up to $1.1 million. I knew that. And that's why I bought the home I bought. That's why I took on the mortgage I took on. You can't take that away from me. That's a contract. And millions of Americans have that exact same contract that have had it since almost the day of the income tax in 1913. Nothing is more precious and important than the contract with homeowners. I'm a guy who believes we should have a flat tax, but you don't have to take away, even with the most ideal flat tax, you do not need to take away the home mortgage deduction. You want to encourage people to dig in roots in their community and own a home. Nothing's more important because real estate is the American economy. It's not part of it. It is the American economy. It blows the stock market away. The stock market's up, and the economy is still horrible, whereas when real estate crashed, the entire country went under. That's how important real estate is to this country. So we've got Tino Diaz on right now. Tino, say hi to Savage Nation.
Wayne, it's an absolute pleasure to be on here with you. You know, the son of a butcher, real entrepreneur, and a champion of free market capitalism. So this is wonderful.
Isn't it amazing that someone like me feels like I have a contract with the government and they're willing to rip it away from me and say, even though you bought your house knowing you'd have this deduction, we're going to now take it away from you. That's potentially on the table now because of Obama. But a lot of Republicans go along with this nonsense without realizing that millions of upper-income homeowners in this country could face losing their home to foreclosure if they no longer had that deduction.
Yes, you know, it's like the Washington policymakers are now telling us that if you like your mortgage interest deduction, keep your mortgage interest deduction. That is until they change your mind, you know.
But this has been around since what, 1913?
Yes, it has. It kicked in 1913, and we reaffirmed that in the 40s when we created the FHA, the Federal Housing Administration. We wanted to incent home ownership because we knew what a powerful tool it was to help the family, the American family, and what a backbone it was to the American economy. And over the years, in fact, over the last 50 years, it's absolutely unquestionable in terms of the very positive effect that home ownership has, not only in the economy, but more importantly in all the social issues, in terms of the quality of life, in terms of safety, in terms of having a stable base, tax base for local municipalities to be able to fund their stuff. You know, it's just a never-ending set of social benefits that you get from folks who own a home. I'm so sorry to see that the actual consideration is being given to either diminishing or lowering this tax deduction or almost eliminating the whole thing altogether. So it really is something that we've got to get you need to have the folks in the Washington policymakers decide that they need to back this and not take it out.
Well, it's, you know, you talked about never ending. It's a real estate's a never ending reach into the economy. When you think of who lives off of people buying homes, you think of banks, you think of mortgage brokers, you think of real estate brokers, you think of real estate developers, you think of builders, you think of concrete companies, you think of framing companies, you think of furniture companies, you think of interior designers, you think of carpet companies, painters, plumbers, electricians. Every one of them is down the tubes if real estate collapses. So what I find funny, Tino, is that somebody in politics could talk about how important it is to keep the real estate market pumped up, and yet at the same time, they would even consider getting rid of the mortgage deduction. What would happen to the value of the average home in this country if you eliminated the mortgage deduction right now?
Well, there are all kinds of estimates, but the opinion is that it would head down in terms of the value. And you're so right about all the different folks that are affected by this. There are actual rock-solid estimates to talk about how the home ownership and the whole economy that revolves around it affects about 25% of the economy, the U.S. economy. And so we have never, in the history of modern history, ever seen a recovery of an economy coming out of a recession or even a depression without real estate leading the way. In a sense, you've got to have a strong real estate market, and that, in a sense, it makes a foundation for which everything else is built on. So you can see the connection between the recovery of that and all the laborers, all the folks that take care of these things, all the little folks that depend on, there's a whole ecosystem that depends on this industry. And the industry is rock solid because it deals with putting a roof over families' heads. I mean, it's so basic. It's one of the most basic things. If you look at Maslow's theory of hierarchy, you know, there's two things that are basic to people. Number one is food, and number two is shelter. And a home is one of those things that is indispensable for a family, particularly a family wants to have their own say in what they want to do, how they want to live their life, what they want to do with their property. It's very, very basic. It's one of the most basic things. Our founding fathers felt it was an indispensable piece to protect that, because without that protection, they really believed that we would lose our freedoms. So it's that basic, and that's formidable in terms of what it represents. It's terrible to try to take away that deduction, because if the mortgage interest deduction goes away, not only does it dip in terms of the value of the property, but more importantly, it affects the ability for people to become and to stay homeowners.
Well, it affects your ability to keep your home. I mean, if you think that the foreclosure crisis was bad before, well, people, you know, the average person in Vegas, see, I live in Las Vegas, and say the average home here was $500,000. And then the real estate market collapses, there's a foreclosure crisis, and the average home goes from 500,000 to 100,000. Now, a lot of people lost their homes because of that drop. They couldn't make the payment anymore. But they were still able to take their entire mortgage payment and deduct all the interest off their taxes. It's still the biggest single tax, legal tax shelter in America today. Can you imagine how many more houses would have gone into foreclosure, thereby pulling all the banks into bankruptcy and taking down Wall Street and taking down the construction industry, if the people who owned a $400,000 or $500,000 house that dropped to $100,000 but still had a $300,000 mortgage couldn't even deduct the mortgage off their taxes? Can you imagine the entire Las Vegas, the entire Miami, the entire LA, the entire San Diego, the entire Phoenix, which are the cities that all the big foreclosures? Every one of them would have been, everyone would have foreclosed on their property. Everyone. What happens to the economy when you can't make your mortgage payment and you no longer get the deductions, you know?
It becomes catastrophic, Wayne, and that's the pity behind it. That's why it's not only the mortgage interest deduction, there's a whole host of other things that are coming, that are emanating from Washington, that are percolating there, that people need to watch out. That's why, that's why we formed the America's Homeowner Alliance. We formed it to be the voice, the national voice, for the 75 million existing homeowners and the future homeowners of America. The America's Homeowner Alliance was created to protect and promote sustainable homeownership for all segments of America. And by sustainable, we mean that not only can you acquire a home, but policies have to be in place to support the ability for people to keep their home.
And Tino, what's your background? I'm wondering where you came from. What made you get involved in this business?
Well, I got into home ownership back in 1975 when I set up a savings loan in the city, inner city of Chicago, to bring financing back into the inner city. At that time, we had all the redlining, and we needed to bring it back. And so that's how I got started. So I've been around for a while on this in the area of real estate and real estate finance, and particularly putting families into homes. And I've seen the wonderful things that happen to folks who, over time, without really knowing it, you know, they're sitting there making their little payments little by little. By God, by the time 20, 25 years roll along, they have a really good nest egg for their families and a way to pass on wealth. So that's why we created this. We're seeing attacks coming from left and right. I'd like people to go to our website at, www.myaha.com. It's myaha.com. And in there, they can see all the key issues in terms of what's percolating, in addition to the potential loss or complete loss or diminishment of the mortgage interest deduction. There's a lot of other issues. People need to get informed about these things. They don't realize how many things are happening that are encroaching on our ability to buy or maintain our home ownership.
Tino Diaz, CEO of America's Homeowners Alliance. And, Tino, you mentioned that this mortgage deduction has been around since 1913. That's kind of amazing. I didn't know that. You know, as you could tell, I think I'm pretty knowledgeable about mortgages, and I understand the deduction real well, but I had no idea that it's been around since 1913, because that was the year income tax was first introduced in America. I always laugh that 1913 is the worst year in the history of the United States of America. We got the income tax, and we got the Federal Reserve in that year, but at least one good thing happened, and we got the mortgage deduction, and that must mean from the first moment anybody ever thought about an income tax, even then, 100 years ago, they decided that the number one thing they had to do was add a mortgage deduction, correct?
The number one thing was to make sure that there was a deductibility for interest when people invested in things. And sure enough, you know, over the last more than 100 years now, we've seen how a wonderful effect this has had on the economy. When you're able to invest and say, look, I'm taking a risk on these things, I'd like to be able to deduct the interest that I'm paying on to try to build up a little nest egg, whether it's a business or a home. And again, we really reaffirmed this and really came on strong in terms of the importance of home ownership. Right after the Depression, we realized that without home ownership, we Americans were not going to be able to build their net worth. They were not going to be able to have a place, to plant a place, you know. So they reaffirmed it again very, very strongly. So it would be a shame that they would be looking at something like this. This is one of the first interest deductions that ever came into being. It should be the last thing that we consider taking off. There's many other things that have come in place before that. This has always benefited America, not just the families that are homeowners, but everyone who in America benefits from having a strong base of homeowners because of all the great social benefits that are provided.
All right, so much more to talk to you about, Tino. We'll be back in just a minute with Tino Diaz, CEO of America's Homeowners Alliance. And we'll find out what we can do to fight this, folks. If you own a home, we got to fight this. We got to do more than talk about it. We got to find a solution, and we got to scare the bejesus out of all our representatives to make sure we don't lose our mortgage interest deduction. We've also got callers on the line to talk about the mortgage interest deduction, and I want to talk to them about it with Tino on the line. When we get back, I'm Wayne Allyn. This is War Savage Nation. We'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Welcome back. This is War. Wayne Allyn Root, guest host for Michael Savage. Phone lines are open. The number is 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. That's 855-400-7282. I'm on with Tino Diaz, who is the CEO of America's Homeowners Alliance, fighting to keep that mortgage interest deduction alive and well after 100 years of creating better neighborhoods and great wealth for middle-class people. It's a fantastic thing. I know one thing. My grandfather built wealth in this country as a man who came to America with nothing and opened a tiny little butcher store with one employee himself, and then two, and then three, and then four. And really, his wealth came from that butcher store and his mortgage interest deduction and the value of his house. Those were the three things that changed his life and made him grow, I won't say wealthy, but by standards of a small businessman, wealthy in America. That's what creates wealth and something to leave your heirs. That's what creates mobility in America. Go from poor to middle class and middle class to wealthy, and it all comes from your home and your business, which, by the way, are the only two legal tax shelters left in America. Think about it. You get to shelter your mortgage deduction. Why would, if I made $100,000 and I use 30 of it to pay the mortgage, why would I have to pay taxes on $30,000 I'm using for my mortgage? If I pay tax on it, there'd be nothing left to pay the mortgage. So number one, it gives you value in your home and something to leave your family and something to use in old age. If you need a nursing home, you got to get the money from the home. And number two is your small business allows you to shelter your income because everything that you do in business is tax deductible. So the whole key to America, like it or not, folks, and I see there's some callers who are telling us how terrible the mortgage interest deduction is. It's a scam, really. There's only two things left in this entire country that allow you to save a dollar from Barack Obama and his socialist cabal and the thieves in Washington that want to steal everything you make. And those two things are your only opportunities. You got to buy a house, the mortgage is good for you, and you build value while you get to deduct the mortgage. And number two, you got to own a business to save your money from the IRS. That's it. Tax deduction on mortgage and own a business. Tino, am I going in the right direction here?
You're absolutely right, Wayne. And I'll tell you what, here's an offer I'd like to make, and that is for the first five callers that come on the station, if you catch the name, if you grab their name, their telephone number, and their email, I will give them, those five people, a one-year membership to the America's Homeowner Alliance. And that's myaha.com. That's myaha.com. They'll get a one-year membership. Membership is $20. But with the discount and points program that you have from more than 1,000 participating merchants that we have on our rewards program, they'll be able to save that money in spades, in multiples. In fact, I've been able to do that. I went in there the first time for about an hour, and I got, you know, five times my membership back.
Well, Rick, let's let one of them join right now. I want to bring him on the line. His name is Rick. He's from Las Vegas. It's line number 7. I'm in Vegas, so that attracted my attention. Rick from Las Vegas, who says Congress doesn't follow the mortgage interest deduction. What do you mean by that, Rick? You're on with Wayne Allen Root and Tino Diaz of America's Homeowners Alliance.
Hi, Wayne. How are you, sir?
Great. Tell us what you mean.
I'm actually from Northern Virginia. I'm here on vacation.
And you're calling in. Well, on vacation, you're listening to talk radio. I love you, Rick.
I'm listening to you on my Campground of America Wi-Fi streaming videos.
So tell us what you mean by Congress doesn't follow mortgage interest deduction.
Now, I guess the screener basically asked me that. I explained it. Congress does not honor any contract they made. Congress changes every 2 years. The next bunch of people we get in Congress 2 years from now, depending on what party they're from, that is the fattest $70 billion a year deduction that's available to raise money to get these people elected by people that don't pay taxes anyway.
By people that don't pay taxes anyway. Tell me who you're talking about.
Pretty much. About 50% of America doesn't pay taxes, and I'm willing to bet you that out of those 50%, very few actually own a home or have jobs that pay.
Agreed.
Above, you know, minimum wage.
Agreed. I think the problem with the mortgage interest deduction, Tino, I'm sure you'll agree with me, is most homeowners, 99% of them, will fight for it, but the people who don't own a home couldn't care less. The same reason I've said for years that I'm a small businessman, but I always earn $250,000 and above. Most of America could not care less when the politicians come after people that earn $250,000 or above, and so we have no volume. Hey, you know, Tito, we're done. Tell everybody where they could find out more about your Homeowners Alliance.
You want to go to www.myaha.com. That's myaha.com. And you'll see, in addition to the issue of the mortgage interest deduction, there's a whole host of other issues.
Warning. The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, Michael Savage.
This is War, Wayne Allen Root, the capitalist evangelist. How are you? Guest host for Michael Savage, the great Dr. Michael Savage. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Cumulus Radio, for giving me this wonderful platform. The phone number, call in for the next hour. No more guests. It's just me and you talking politics, talking hot issues, talking America and the economy. 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-SAVAGE. That's 855-400-7282. I am the anti-Obama. Obama's college classmate asked me about our backgrounds at Columbia University, what he learned at Columbia, how he learned to destroy the American economy. I'm an SOB, son of a butcher. Let's talk about small business being the American dream and how Obama's trying to destroy it. I'm the author of the ultimate Obama Survival Guide, one of the 10 best-selling political books in America for the last year. I'm also a sports guy. By the way, the Fight Hunger Bowl in San Francisco right now going on. Washington 21, BYU 13 as we approach halftime. 21-13 Washington leading BYU. See, you get an eclectic show here from War, Wayne Allen Root. A little bit of sports, a little bit of business, a little bit of politics. And we've got a caller I want to talk to because he disagrees with me about the mortgage interest. And he says it's a scam. Actually, it's a woman. Gwen, I think is a gal from Memphis, call number 8. Gwen, are you on the line?
Hey, sweet.
Hey.
God, you are one of my heroes, Wayne.
Well, how come you're against the mortgage deduction when your hero loves it? What's the deal, Gwen?
Conservative, libertarian, but I am not going to discard my Republican card because I think that's going to... Anyway, here's what I wanted to say. It is not a scam... maybe I misspoke that, but in 1913, three major amendments to the Constitution were enacted under cover of darkness. One of them was, you know what they are, the 17th Amendment, where states could appoint senators. Now they have to be elected. The Federal Reserve enactment, that took place in 1913, and the income tax.
It was not a good year, right?
That's what I'm talking about. I will give you a little blurb real quick. I fought for the fair tax. I have fought for it for almost 20 years when it first started.
Well, here's the deal, Gwen. I'm a big fan of either a flat tax simulating the Hong Kong economy or a fair tax simulating the Nevada economy, by the way. Here I am in Nevada, and people complain about the unemployment in Nevada, which is terrible because we're based on casinos and gambling and tourism and construction. They always said the state bird was the crane. We had so much construction here, and it's all about real estate. And when the country went under, Nevada got hit the worst out of all 50 states. But the reality is every day people are buying houses in Nevada. We have the most robust real estate market in America now, today, after everything that happened. Why? Because we have zero income tax, and we basically have the fair tax. We have a sales tax, but no income tax. That works, and people vote with their feet, and they move to the state that has the best economy for them. So while Nevada has had its problems economically because of America's problems, the reality is, in Detroit, you can't give a house away. In Detroit, houses are sold all the time at auction for $100. Some houses have sold for as little as $1. And yet, in Las Vegas, they're lined up 20, 30, 50 people making cash offers for every single home. You can't sell a house fast enough in Las Vegas. That's how many people want to get into the Vegas market. And every day, wealthy people are moving into Vegas to take advantage of our zero income tax. So there's no question that the fair tax or the flat tax would work. Hong Kong proves
that the flat tax works, greatest economy in the world with a 15% flat tax, and Nevada proves the fair tax works. The thing that doesn't work, Gwen, and anybody out there listening who says what works, what doesn't work is what Obama proposes. 40% income taxes now. If you add in the Obamacare taxes, we're at about 44% taxes. That's higher than Greece. Greece completely bankrupt. Greece run by a leader who at least admits he's a communist. You know, they have the Socialist Party in charge of Greece. The leaders are communists. In America, we have a Socialist Party. It's called the Democratic Party. Its leaders are communists, but they won't admit they're communists. They call themselves liberals, progressives. It's all a lie. They hate that word communist like a cockroach hates sunlight. Turn on the light and a cockroach runs. Liberals get so angry when you use the word communist. They call you radical extreme. They're the ones that are radical and extreme. We either need a flat tax like Hong Kong or we need a fair tax, because in the end, as my father used to say, I'd love to hate rich people, but no one poor ever gave me a job. We need to create growth. We need to create rich people. And the only way to do it is with low taxes so people could save enough money to start their own business, and with a mortgage deduction that allows you to create enough wealth in your home to take a home equity loan and start your own business. For those out there who think the mortgage deduction is a scam, you don't know what you're talking about. My grandfather came here with nothing, and the value in his home made him a rich man. The value of owning a small business made him a rich man, a modestly rich man by small business standards, but nonetheless, someone who came here penniless and died with maybe $1 million-odd in the United States of America, most of it from his home in New York. Home builds value. Home is about mortgage interest deduction. How about John? John in Sacramento, line 9, says the home mortgage tax deduction is excessive. John, tell us what you mean.
Well, I guess you said it's $1.1 million. I don't know too many people that make $1.1 million. It's not a middle class deduction.
No, but it's not about what you make. The home mortgage deduction has nothing to do with making $1 million. You're allowed to deduct a mortgage of up to $1.1 million. And, John, you know, I know, you know, in middle America, they may think that's a lot of money. But in the two coasts, in San Francisco, in Los Angeles, in San Diego, in Las Vegas, where I live, in New York, where I was born, in Boston and Philadelphia, a rat hole costs $1 million nowadays. You can't buy a house for less than $750,000 in an average middle-class neighborhood on the two coasts. So it's not excessive to say that your mortgage deduction should be up to $1.1 million.
Well, as far as incomes, I don't think too many people make $1.1 million.
No, you're missing me. You're missing me, John. It's not about income. It's got nothing to do with income. You're allowed to deduct a home mortgage of up to $1.1 million. It's not your income. So in other words, you could own a house that costs, say, $1.3 million, and you put $200,000 down, and you have a mortgage of $1.1 million. You're allowed to deduct the interest on that, which is probably about $50,000 a year. So don't be confused as to what it is. It has nothing to do with your income. It doesn't even have to do with, it's not like you're paying $1 million a year in mortgage. You've got $1 million mortgage on your home, and the law allows you to deduct that. Just so everybody understands, thank you for your call, John. Just so everybody understands where this came from, there's a lot of deceitfulness going on with the messages Obama gives you. Obama tells us that income taxes are at an all-time historic low. Total lie. As a matter of fact, they're among the highest in history, if not the highest in history, because there used to be many more deductions. Now, originally, the mortgage deduction was unlimited. If you had a $20 million mansion and it was an $18 million mortgage, you could deduct the interest on the entire $18 million mortgage. If you owned 4 homes all over America and each one was a $5 million mortgage, you could deduct the combined $20 million mortgages as recently as the early 1980s. And then we changed the tax structure. We lowered tax rates, which is a good thing, made it much flatter. Ronald Reagan did that, brought it down from the 70% tax percentile to 28%. But in return, he said you could only take up to $1 million mortgage deduction, 1.1 to be exact. So that's how we came to this. But the reality is you used to be able to deduct every single dime, no matter how big your mortgage was. They've already cut it. It's not excessive. It's already been cut. And the reality is, this is how screwed up our politicians are. It should have been $1.1 million in 1985 through Ronald Reagan's tax reform. It should have been $1.1 million plus a cost of living increase. How do you pass something that allows you to deduct $1 million in a house in 1985, and today you can only deduct the same $1 million even though there's been massive inflation since 1985. It's unbelievable. How do you not index a tax deduction according to inflation? So $1 million in 1985 was probably equal to a $3 million house today, and that's what you should be allowed to deduct. The reality is it's a much worse deduction now than it's ever been. A house that used to sell for $300,000 now sells for $1.5 million in the last 30 years. That's how much it's gone up. But your deduction has not gone up. And for those of you who hate this mortgage deduction, you all have the same opportunity. That's what's so great about America. If you're poor now, if you're middle class now, if you're upper middle class, you have a chance to buy a house, and when it goes up in value, you get that mortgage deduction. And so you have a chance to be rich and play with the big boys. And every time you play that Obama game, it's not fair because I don't have $1 million, so why should he get to deduct his $1 million? You're killing the chances of your kids and your grandkids playing ball with the millionaires. The only way to be a millionaire is to think like a millionaire, to act like a millionaire, and to fight for equality with millionaires. You got to be able to save your money from taxes, invest in a business, invest in a home, take advantage of that mortgage deduction, and one day you will be rich too, folks. That's how it works. Anything other than that, you're playing the Obama communist game, and you're hating rich people, and the only thing you're doing is condemning yourself and your family to a life of poverty. You will never play with the Warren Buffetts as long as you hate their guts because they're rich. You got to love them. You got to idolize them. You got to model your life after them to be successful. Or as my dad used to say, the Republican Party is not the party of the rich, son. It's the party of anyone who ever wants to be rich or whoever hopes their kids will be rich one day. And you know what? It worked. My dad said it, and I lived it, and I am a self-made millionaire. God bless America. God bless capitalism, and God bless the Republican Party and the conservative movement. I'm Wayne Allyn. This is War Savage Nation. We'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
This is War, Wayne Allyn, and I'm going to war against Obama, but I'm also going to war against the Republican Party. See, I'm an equal opportunity offender. I think the Republican Party suffers from the Stockholm Syndrome, where you make friends with your oppressor, you make friends with your kidnapper, you make friends with the guy who's holding you hostage and threatening to kill you, you make nice with that guy. And you're just happy that he spared your life, when in reality you should want the guy to, you know, go away. Well, that's the problem. The Republicans in D.C. are just schmoes. Is that the right word? Schmoes. I don't want to say the other word on the air. But the end result is, they don't fight. They bring a knife to a gunfight. We got a caller that obviously agrees. His name is Bill from Connecticut, and he says Republicans aren't running the party right. So, Bill, you're on with Wayne Allyn. How do you want Republicans to run the party?
Well, here's what I want them to do. First of all, I want them to get off the stick and get away from Boehner and start acting like they're what they believe in. I can remember, I'm a lifelong Republican, and I've held office as a Republican for 12 years when I lived in New Jersey. And I spoke to many candidates, even after the tremendous win that we had in 2010, telling them about Obamacare. This was before it came in. I used to travel overseas on business, and I can remember a lady in England telling me that her husband needed a medically necessary operation that was surgically necessary but not life-threatening, and he had to wait 2 years for it. And I had suggested to many of these congressional candidates to talk to people in countries like England and let them tell their stories of what Obamacare was going to bring to them. But they agreed, and they said it sounded good, but they never did anything. I think they were afraid that Obamacare might prove that it was good or that people may have wanted it. But now we've got 20 Democratic senators running for re-election, or there are 20 Democratic seats up in the next election. And every one of those Democratic seats voted for Obamacare, and that should be used in every campaign against them. And now that we know, the country knows that Obamacare is a debacle, and Obama himself doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, this was a law that was 2,700 pages. How could you write a computer program? This man never had a job in his life, and how could he talk about this, or how could he tell people how to write it or how to do it? And
because, Bill, they all wanted something free. Women wanted free contraception. And, you know, the average person out there wanted health care for a dollar a month. Well, you know, they're going to get it.
it's going to be bad quality health care. It's going to destroy the rest of us. It's like Cuba. We're all going to live in shared misery. He's bringing us down to the all to the same horrible level. But to the average American, it sounds great to give them something free. And I agree with you. Thank you for the call, Bill. I agree that Republicans just don't understand branding. They don't know how to defeat this guy. Do you know what I would do to destroy Obamacare and Obama at the same time? I would go out to people's homes and businesses, bring a camera, and film their stories, their heartbreaking stories. People with cancer losing their insurance. People with diabetes losing their insurance. People with strokes and heart disease scared to death because they've lost their insurance. People whose prices have been doubled, tripled for health insurance, and they have no idea whatsoever how they're going to pay the bill. How about people whose son perhaps committed suicide because he lost his insurance and had nowhere to turn and he's got cancer and didn't know what to do? People who didn't lose their insurance but lost their doctor who's kept them alive for 4 years. And how about small businesses reporting they're going to go out of business because of Obamacare, or they're going to drop all their employees' health care, or they're going to cut half their workforce and no one's going to have a job anymore? And you take that and you put it in a TV infomercial and you buy real estate, blocks of real estate on TV, meaning blocks of time, 30 minutes at a time, all over networks, every single night, and in the middle of the night, and in the morning, when people turn on their TV and they go channel surfing, they see the infomercial attacking Obamacare, destroying the brand, and therefore forevermore poisoning America towards Obamacare. It's exactly what Barack Obama did to Mitt Romney, by the way. Exactly. Mitt Romney was attacked for 4 months, uninterrupted, with no Republican ads supporting him, by Democratic ads saying, the guy is a killer. The guy is a disaster. The guy kills jobs. The guy takes away people's health insurance and they die. And Mitt Romney never recovered. It went unanswered. Ladies and gentlemen, this is War. I'm Wayne Allyn-Root. You're on Savage Nation. We'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
All right, I'm back. Just in the nick of time, I almost gave my producer a heart attack. Hey, listen, my Chinese food arrived. Come on, a man's got to eat. This is War. Wayne Allyn-Root, guest host for Dr. Michael Savage, capitalist evangelist, the anti-Obama, former Libertarian vice presidential candidate, and lover of all foods Asian, Chinese, Thai, Vietnamese, sushi. Gosh, do I love Asian food. Oh, my gosh. It's an orgy of Asian food at my house 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and my Chinese food has just arrived. So, folks, do you understand the sacrifice I'm making for you? I would rather be on the line with you than eat Chinese food. That's saying something. All right, let's talk about Obamacare. Let's switch gears and talk a little bit about Obamacare. Let me give you the number first in case you want to call in and chat with me about it. It's 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. 472-82, 855-400-SAVAGE, S-A-V-A-G-E, for Dr. Michael Savage. The website, of course, michaelsavage.com, where you can read all of Michael's books. He's written so many of them, I've lost count. You can find out about all the hot stories in the news and all the hot stories we talk about right here on Savage Nation. It's all at michaelsavage.com. And I also want to remind you about my website. My website's root4america.com. You'll find out about my book, The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide, one of the best-selling political books of 2013, The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide, and you'll also get my commentaries for free at root4america.com. All right, and one of my most popular commentaries of my entire career, not one of them, actually the most popular commentary of my whole career, is one of the, if not the most popular commentary of the year at Fox News. It's called Why Obamacare is a Fantastic Success. If you read it at Fox News, and over a million people have read it, then now you know you're on the line with Wayne Root, the guy who wrote it. I'm that guy. Why Obamacare is a Fantastic Success. And what I said was there are two major political parties in America. I'm a member of the naive, stupid, and cowardly one. One of them's evil. That's Obama and the Democrats, a.k.a. communists. And I'm a member of the Republican Party that's naive, stupid, and cowardly. How stupid is the GOP? They still don't get it. I've told them in my book, The Ultimate Obama Survival Guide, I've told them in hundreds of articles and commentaries that Obamacare was never meant to help America or heal the sick or lower health care costs or lower the debt or expand the economy. The GOP has got to stop
calling Obamacare a train wreck, because if it was about helping the economy and healing the sick, it would be a failure. I admit that. It would be a train wreck. But it's not. It never was. It's not a flop. It's not a failure. It's not a mistake. It's not an accident. It's a brilliant, cynical, and purposeful attempt to bring down capitalism. And it's a grand success. It's not a train wreck. It's a suicide attack. And the suicide bomber is Barack Obama. He wants to hurt us, to bring us to our knees, to capitulate, so we agree under duress to accept big government. Now, Obama's hero and mentor was Saul Alinsky, a radical Marxist intent on destroying capitalism. And Alinsky's stated advice was to call the other guy a terrorist to hide your own intentions, to scream that the other guy is ruining America while you're the one plotting the destruction of America, to claim in every sentence of every speech you are saving the middle class, as Obama does. He opens every speech by saying he's the middle class guy, and he's saving the middle class, and he's looking out for the middle class, and the middle class is being hurt, and he doesn't tell you he feels your pain because he's the one causing it. You're the one busy wiping out the middle class, Saul Alinsky would tell you. While you're wiping out the middle class, you tell him you're out to help him. And the GOP is so stupid they can't see it. There's no mistake here. Obama's not dumb. He's not ignorant. He's not incompetent. This is a planned, purposeful attack. And the telltale sign isn't the disastrous start to Obamacare or the devastating effect the new taxes are having on the economy, or the death of full-time jobs, or the overwhelming debt, or the dramatic increase in health insurance rates and the amount of people losing their health insurance, or the 70% of doctors now thinking of retiring. Forget all that. All horrible stuff. But the real sign that this is a purposeful attack upon capitalism is how many Obama administration members and Democratic congressmen are openly calling Tea Party Republicans and anyone who wants to stop Obamacare terrorists. That's the clue. Even the clueless GOP should be able to see that. They're calling reasonable people, the patriots, the people who believe in the Constitution, the people who believe exactly what the Founding Fathers believed, limited government, the people who want to take power away from corrupt politicians who have put America $17 trillion in debt, they're calling them terrorists? Really? That's because they are Saul Alinskying the GOP. The people trying to purposely hurt American capitalism and the middle class are calling the patriots by a terrible name to confuse and distract and fool the public. Let me tell you what Obamacare was really created to do. Stop calling it a failure. It is succeeding on all counts. Number one, it was intended to bring about the Marxist dream, redistribution of wealth. Rich people, small business owners, and the middle class are being robbed that the money could be redistributed to poor people. Think about it. If you're rich or middle class, if you own a small business, you now have to pay for your own health care costs, which are now ballooning to all-time record highs. So you just lost a lot of money. Your rates got doubled. And you're paying gigantic new Obamacare taxes, $500 billion over the next 10 years. So 30 or 40 million other people's costs are automatically completely wiped out and paid for by you. So you're stuck paying for both bills, your own bill and everyone else's bill. You're left broke. Brilliant. By the way, that's the way the education system works now, too, by the way. I pay $65,000 a year so my daughter can go to Harvard. But meanwhile, there are kids all over America going to college subsidized by me. My taxes pay for them to go free to college or at greatly reduced cost. So I'm paying both full freight for my daughter and I'm paying partial freight for all the people who want to go for free. Matter of fact, my daughter's $65,000 bill at Harvard is that high because they want to give free rides to people that are poor. And by the way, I like the idea of diversity in college. I like the idea that you want people who are black and Hispanic and women to get a great education. That's the way America improves. I get that. What I don't like is that their free ride is on me while I'm paying full freight, so I'm getting hit from both ends. Same thing with Obamacare. It is a brilliant scheme to bankrupt the middle class, to bankrupt all of us, to take our money away. Number two, Obamacare was intended to wipe out the middle class, just what I was saying, and make them dependent on government. So here's what Obama's own IRS predicts that health insurance will cost for a typical American family by 2016, $20,000 a year. That's not Wayne Root. That's not Michael Savage. That's not, you know, Mitt Romney or some Republican talking. $20,000 a year is what health insurance will cost the typical American family by 2016. Who says it? Obama's IRS says it. Wow. That's amazing. Where are middle-class people going to get $20,000 a year to pay for health insurance? By the way, that's pre-tax $20,000 a year. That's, you got to make $30,000 or $40,000, depending on your tax bracket, to pay the $20,000. Now, the average middle-class American makes $40,000 or $50,000 a year. The ones who are doing well make $60,000 or $70,000 a year. How could they spend $20,000 pre-tax on health insurance without becoming homeless? Bingo. That's how you make middle-class people dependent on government. That's how you make everyone addicted to government checks. Brilliant. Number three, as a bonus, Obamacare is intended to kill every decent-paying job in the economy, creating only crummy, crappy part-time jobs. Why? Just to make sure that the middle class, just to make absolutely 100% damn sure the middle class is trapped with no way out. Just to make sure no one's got the $20,000 a year to pay for health insurance, thereby guaranteeing they all become wards of the state. Brilliant. So one of two things happen. Either you ask the government to pay for your health insurance or heavily subsidize your health insurance, or you pay your own health insurance and then you ask the government for food stamps, welfare, and disability. Either way, Obama's got you. Number four. Oh, by the way, for those who don't believe me, since the first of this year, I'm telling you that this was created to kill every decent-paying job in the economy, creating only crummy, crappy part-time jobs. Since the first of this year, economists agree somewhere between 88% and 94% of all the jobs created in America are crummy, crappy part-time jobs. So there's no reason to debate this anymore, folks. There's nothing to debate. Number four, Obamacare is intended to bankrupt small business and therefore starve donations to the Republican Party. Think about it. Do you know a small business owner? I know hundreds of them. Their rates are being doubled, triple, and quadruple. And guess who writes most of the checks to Republican candidates and conservative causes? Small business owners. So even if a small business owner manages to survive by passing some of the costs on to consumers, number one, that means you're the consumer. You're getting buried. But he's got to eat some of the costs. He or she will have to eat some of the costs. So they can't write a big check to the Republican Party anymore. So small business people that every year would write a $1,000 check to five different Republican candidates can't do it anymore. Money's the mother's milk of politics. And without donations, a political party ceases to exist. Bingo. That's the point of Obamacare. To create all these new voters getting health insurance for $1 a month. As I talked about last night's show, $1 a month to get a full health insurance policy. Well, they're going to vote Democrat for the rest of all time in order to keep getting their $1 a month health care and to wipe out donations to the Republican Party so that our party ceases to exist and there is no more opposition to Obama or Obamacare. Obama is bankrupting the political opposition and drying up donations to the GOP. How do I know? Let me give you a fact again, because it's working even on me. Inflation is raging. Everything at the from the pump to the grocery store, much higher than when Obama took office. So all my bills are up. And my daughter goes to Harvard. That's $65,000 a year. And that goes up, 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 up. My income way down. Everything I'm involved in. I own multiple businesses. Everything's down 40%, 50%, 60% on Main Street. If you own a small business, you know exactly what I'm talking about. So your bills are up. And your expenses are up, and your income is down, and your taxes are up, and there's no money left at the end of the month. So when the Republican Party comes calling and says, hey, Wayne Root, I'm running for Congress or U.S. Senate, write me a check for $3,000, I laugh at them. Oh, yeah, 10 years ago I would write you a check for $2,300 or me and my wife together, $4,600, the maximum contribution. Today I can't do that anymore. You got to be dreaming. That's what Obama's created, folks. He's taken away your money, and therefore you have no money to donate to Republican causes. I'll finish this when we come back from the break. Let's go to a break here, go to an advertising break. But when we come back, I'll tell you the rest of what Obamacare was created to do, and I want to take your calls. The phone number is 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Get on the line, and let's talk about the real reasons for Obamacare. I'm Wayne Allyn Root. This is War on Savage Nation.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Hey, everyone, welcome back. War, Wayne Allen Root. We're back here on Savage Nation, guest hosting this week for Michael Savage. I'll be back on Monday as well. Happy New Year, everyone. Happy holidays. Hard to even say that, right? You hear all this negative stuff, and you get scared to death, and you say, how can you say happy holidays, Wayne? How can you say happy New Year? Well, first of all, I'm a guy who always sees the glasses half full, not half empty. So I'll tell you about all the tragedy and all the crisis and all the terrible things heading our way. But in the end, the glass is half full because I always see solutions, and there are solutions. Lots of them. But you got to throw the bums out. That's the solution, by the way. Throw the bums out and term limit the politicians. You just got to get serious about doing it. I call it veto. Vote every one of them out. Veto, Republican and Democrat. They're all bums. John Boehner's a bum. Mitch McConnell's a bum. We got to vote these people, these rhinos, Republicans in name only, out. I'll tell you a quick story. Most people don't know about me. I was born into a political family. My father was a blue-collar butcher, but he answered an ad in the newspaper in 1962. If you don't like the rhinos that are running the Republican Party of New York State and you want to throw the bums out, come to the first ever meeting of the New York State Conservative Party. And my dad showed up at the meeting and became one of the founders of the New York State Conservative Party. And at the age of three, I found myself in my dad's arms handing out literature for Barry Goldwater. And my dad, the two people he hated, Nelson Rockefeller and Jacob Javits. Rockefeller was the Republican governor of New York. Javits was the Republican senator of New York. Both were liberals. They were not in any way, shape, or form Republican. They were not in any way, shape, or form conservative. My dad worked day and night to knock them out, and he did knock them out. Eventually, they were gone. Jacob Javits got defeated by Al D'Amato. And it was one of the great upsets in the history of New York State politics, maybe in the history of America's politics. So there's a story for you. The Tea Party can win. My father and myself proved it 40 years ago. In the 1960s and 1970s, we elected James Buckley, U.S. Senator, state of New York. Can you imagine New York, the most liberal state in America? We elected a conservative, no Republican endorsement, just conservative third-party candidate, United States Senator. And I remember walking up and down stairs and walking up and down train stations and walking in front of supermarkets and handing out literature for James Buckley and for Senator Al D'Amato. We knocked off Jacob Javits. And then the Conservative Party endorsement of a Republican candidate, George Pataki, was the entire margin of victory for three straight victories as a governor of New York State. 12 years he served as governor as a Republican of New York State, all 12 years because of the Conservative Party. That's the Tea Party of today, folks. We can win. So let me finish my Obamacare rant, and then we'll get some calls. Obamacare is intended to bankrupt small business because they make all the donations to the GOP, and Obamacare is intended to make the IRS all-powerful, and they have thousands of new agents in charge of overseeing 15% of the economy. They're in charge of Obamacare and snooping on all of us. More reasons to look at our bank account, look at our tax returns. Obamacare is intended to unionize 15 million health care workers, and that equals $15 billion in new union dues that can go to Democratic candidates. Folks, that's what Obamacare is about. It's not about healing the sick. It's not about giving insurance to people who don't have insurance. All right, so let's go with caller number 7, David in Dallas. If I don't get Obamacare for my family, what happens? David, you're on the line with Wayne Allen Root on Savage Nation. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great tonight. It's great to be on the line. Never thought that I'd be on there, though.
Well, you're on, David, so what's your question?
Awesome. Okay, well, here's what's going on. I got me and my wife. We have two daughters that are both sovereign at the moment, ever since their time of birth. And, you know, we haven't got any Obamacare. I'm not really even interested in it. You know, totally don't agree with anything the guy's done so far. So, really, I'm not too sure how the repercussions go, but is there any repercussions if I get all my UCC-1 papers filed properly and, you know, basically claim all levy and all that stuff?
Well, let me ask you something. You're saying you don't have Obamacare, but you're using the word in a funny way. Do you have health insurance for your family? Forget about Obamacare. Is your family covered by health insurance, David?
We don't have any at the moment, no.
All right, so, I mean, the answer is very simple. You either get Obamacare, you either get health insurance
under the auspices, the roof of Obamacare, or you get fined. You have to pay a fine. Now, right now, the fine is actually rather small. It's not a huge fine. It's less than if you bought health insurance. So a lot of people will not get Obamacare because they're not scared off by that fine. But the reality is, here's my opinion. Here's my prediction, folks. Mark it down. Wayne Root said it on Friday night on Savage Nation in December. Mark it down. Obamacare will fold. It will collapse if people refuse to join. They need everybody to buy in. They need all your money. So therefore, the fine's going to have to scare people. They're going to have to raise it dramatically in the next year or two. By, let's assume, 2016, the fine will triple or quadruple. It'll be enough to scare the bejesus out of everyone into joining Obamacare. There's my prediction. Thank you for your call, David. We've got another call from Robert in Louisiana. Obamacare is going to be used to invade your privacy. Well, that's true. Welcome to the team, Robert.
Hey, I think that it far outreaches the king in England, because the king of England didn't have these kind of resources. And the census never even thought about getting this kind of information that they're getting. And
hey, Robert, boy, you got on Savage Nation, but time's running out. The show is ending. Thank you for calling. You're 100% right. The King of England never had the computers, never had the IRS, never had the NSA, never was able to listen to every single phone call, never was able to invade your privacy with SWAT teams for government agencies. Obamacare is a nightmare. Robert is right. I'm Wade Allyn Root. Have yourself a great holiday weekend, and I'll see you back here on Monday on...